Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, February the 5th, 2013, and this is hour 174 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And now we hear from Sharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis. How's everything with you today?
Oh, everything's good. And sorry we had a bit of audio trouble last week. That really put a damper on things. Actually stopped us completely. But, well, we're back today and I heard from Jay the other day, and he said he really liked that image of the object out near Saturn, that luminous sphere, seen from a telescope. Do you know that image that's on the NASA page that I have?
Yes, that's one that actually shows an egg-like shape and three guardian spheres.
Yeah, three guardian spheres right there.
And that is exactly the way Riley described it, and very similar to what I saw. And, of course, the other one, of course, is the one that looks like the light bulb. And if we turn it over, it looks like a extraterrestrial.
It really does.
Yeah.
They probably did that on purpose, don't you think?
Oh, no, it was done on purpose because the pilot guy who said he was from Zeta, well, he pointed down where star system was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he said he's located. That was later I found that out when he was showing us where everybody came from, and it wasn't all the same star system, but he pointed toward a lower section, and if you follow that down, it ends up at Reticuli, you know, because the orientation was with Orion's Belt, the three stars at Orion's Belt, and then I recognized it right off. He pointed to that first of all, and then later he said this, he pointed to where he was from, which was, I later found out from a star map that Zeta Reticuli, or Reticuli system, was just about where he was pointing. So he was saying that he was from there. And then it was interesting because when we first saw it, I looked, it was far away, it just looked like a light bulb. And then I said, oh, that light bulb thing. And so that's immediately they corrected me. That's not a light bulb. You know, it's, they take things so literally. He corrected me. That's not a light bulb. And I said, yeah, but it looks like one. And one of the things of observing that, of course, is its luminosity. It was not reflecting light. It had its own light. You know, it's luminous. And that's one of the characteristics I later discovered in the Iranja book, that as far as architectural spheres go, an architectural sphere that is luminous is under the classification a creator sun sphere. In other words, the creator sun, when he does commission or have one under his perhaps personal use, mm-hmm. is given a luminous characteristic. So it is like saying, here I am, you know, it's always lit up. Where a lot of the other architectural spheres, in fact, they're much, some of them are much, much, much larger. The size of planet Earth, or even the entire solar system, but the size of them cannot be really seen because they're dark bodies. They're not luminous. And that's one of the characteristics of architectural spheres in general, except for a sun sphere or a creator sun sphere, which is luminous. And anyway, he stood in front of that. And at the time, it had that kind of bulbous look. And it was in the same position as, you know, that upside down position as if you were to take that Cassini shot picture and flip it over. He stood there. He literally stood there in front of me and kind of like, don't we look alike? You know. He didn't say anything, but he just kind of said, you know, get the impression, you know. Well, anyway, I got the impression anyway. But I said, it still looks like a light bulb. And by the way, your head, I kind of almost joked with it. By the way, your head's kind of shaped like a light bulb. Yeah.
I wonder how many other photographs that NASA has that weren't really posted.
Yeah, really. But that one's very interesting, how you get it from a far range and they zoomed in on it. And, you know, there's a couple of very interesting things that are involved in that Cassini shot with the luminous sphere, the New Jerusalem, or if you want to call it the New Jerusalem, which is said it is basically the same place.
Did I hear you a moment ago say that some architectural spheres are the size of our solar system?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, yes. The main sphere, Havona, things like that are quite large.
That's quite large.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The size of our solar system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there, it's an amazing thing, and right there in your neighborhood, up on top of Haleakala, there's these telescopes. I know they're real busy. Have you ever been in those buildings?
No, no, I only seen them from the outside. They're kind of...
Yeah, me too.
You got to get in those with invitation.
Invitation. And, can't knock on the door.
Sometimes you could, and... generally, they will not bother with you. Mm-hmm. They know who's out there. The characteristic of one of the major ones, Air Force Observatory, is the Star Wars Observatory, and is the one the lady is in there. She's the main eyes out looking out in space, looking for foreign bodies. So. Yeah, I think her personality or her persona was made into a movie. Yeah.
I mean, is there a way you can get into those buildings with an invitation? Because it sure would be nice if you could go in there and ask them, hey, could you point this telescope towards Saturn? I want to see if you can find that object.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I think... When they come right down to it, the particular mission that they're on are to look for foreign bodies and to see if they can find any asteroids ready to smash into our planet or strange satellites that are not accounted for that have been launched secretly, things like that. Mm-hmm. Some of those covert-type launches.
Because there's a lot of observatories up there and up also on
the big island of Hawaii.
Yeah.
Mauna Loa.
Yeah, Mauna Loa.
Mauna Loa's, yeah.
Well, Mauna Loa is the big one, but I was up on, I believe it was Mauna Kea where I was.
Mm-hmm.
They had observatories up there.
Right.
It was August. It was cold up there.
Yeah, there are observatories all over the tops because what they're looking is you need to get clear sky, clear atmosphere actually.
But
and interesting experiments and observations, not all of them are easy to get. The smaller telescopes, maybe like the University of Hawaii ones, are maybe easier. I do have connections into the University of Hawaii, but I never went in to look at the telescope. They're actually shooting laser beams and stuff up there. Those things are pretty interesting, pulse laser beams.
On Oahu?
No, in Haleakala. Oh. So they measure distances. They can take a measurement of a satellite, hit the satellite with the laser beam. Yeah, depends what color laser. Certain lasers are very dangerous, so green laser. But you don't shoot them at the airplane. Definitely got to tell the air pilots, if you're shooting lasers, steer away.
Yeah, really. But since you live right there, it would be really cool if you could get them to point their telescope and take some new pictures.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you remember on hour 8 when Stan called in, and he was a 25-year reader, he and his wife, of the Urantia book, and he was really surprised to hear there was an architectural world in our solar system, because it wasn't written up that way in the Urantia book.
Well, the Urantia book is, you know, it doesn't tell everything. In fact, many things are in general. The specifics are not included, and there's a reason they didn't include the specifics, because it's highly detailed and there's just too much information that would need to be, you know, given. It's much better to have a more general descriptions given.
Yeah, my friend Ted said an English professor that he knew read the Urantia book, and she said that she was really blown away two things. First, the content was overwhelming to her. She was extremely interested in the content, but what really surprised her the most was how perfectly the book was composed. The English was amazing, and the way it was, she said it was just perfectly done. There were no mistakes. Well,
he's not the only person that said that, who was, you know, a literary or, you know, the type of English background.
Yeah.
I think when you referred the name Stan, Stan also indicated that he did hand it to a neighbor who was also a professor in a college of literature. And that person's first comment is that book should not exist. It's too perfect. It should not exist here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it does, and it's...
It's interesting, though, that for Urantia listeners, it's for my... my understanding was it was never given to me from planet Earth. The Hydanal teacher intercepted me as I was sitting at a bench watching a whole bunch of extraterrestrial alien types walking around. And as the crowd cleared, I was just absolutely confused. And I saw him coming, you know, and I intercepted one of them and actually grabbed the hand of one of these aliens. He got really long fingers, by the way. And he got help. And that's when I saw the Dana walk down and say, you know, there's a book on Earth that, you know, helps explain a lot of the things going on here. You know, so and then he described the book as the Book of Earth in terms of what I would understand. And then he said, it's not called the Book of Earth, it's called the Urantia Book. That's when the very first time I heard the name Urantia, meaning Earth. And from there on, of course, I went to school. I was the teacher, basically, and informed me of a lot of things. He was essentially operating in what he called just-in-time learning. In other words, the teacher does appear when the student is ready. And that was exactly what was happening. And they progressively moved me up in terms of where I was classified at in from the natural moving up toward the spiritual, and I had ascended all the way up to a very high level of spiritual curiosity, in which I was able at least to ask some very important questions, which I received answers for, which were wonderful. And one of the greatest truths that were hidden for us is the purpose of all life, and human life, most of all, being the ascension process, to ascend and to literally become a being of pure light energy, a being of pure spiritual energy, a being of eternal.
I'm sorry, I had to stop there for a second. Michael, my recorder stopped for some unknown reason, and you were just saying a being of eternal.
Well, actually, well, we take that as a cue. That's exactly what to become, a being eternal. An eternal being is our real destiny. You understand what I'm getting at anyway?
Yeah, I sure am.
Yeah, because it did come from, I was at that point to get the answer. It wasn't given to me secondhand through the Dano, but it was Dano himself took me to a secret place. It's sort of like a dimension, a travel dimension into this domain, which must be a very higher plane of reality, which includes our lower dimension of time and space. But in this room, I would call it a room, there were two beings, two people, who were like a beam of light, or a column of light. And the blue one and the white, I made a move walking and moved toward the blue light, and he moved away. In his place, the white one moved toward me. And as the white being moved toward me, I began to see from that looking within the beam of light a being of immense beauty, beautiful looking humanoid, human face. Actually, he was kind of Nordic looking, and of white light. And then I was told, when he took that form, I was told to ask the question. The answer then being simply to become as I. And I received that, wow, to become like you? I looked at myself, I still was flesh and blood. So it's like, wow. So there's a whole journey that I must progress through. And his order was introduced prior to that. He says, I'm going to take the Dano, prior to taking me on this like elevator. It was in this, we were both encased in light, the Dano and I, prior to going into that room. And in that, he said he was taking me to the veranda deck, most high, or the veranda decks. Later in the Yerancha book, I discovered that the veranda deck most high observers are two in number and are required to observe a planet that broke into a rebellion, or rebellion planet. You know, we're like not included into the organizing, so the organized government of the, you know, the rest of the universe that is faithful. So these are one, I spoke to one of two veranda deck observers, most highs. They're also given the title most highs. Yeah, and you find the secret place of the most high. He that dwells in the secret place of the most high, you know, dwells in the shadow of the Almighty. Yeah, so that's a biblical, yeah, the secret place of the most high.
Now, when you say a beam of light, we, you know, like headlight column. Beam. Oh,
a column of light.
So is this column from the floor up to?
Up to a fixed point, approximately maybe 6 or 7 feet high. Not very high.
6 or 7 feet high.
In other words, proportion to the height of a human being.
And what does this light look? Does it appear to be a human shape?
No, just a column.
Oh, a column. A column. So it really is a column of light.
Yeah, and they have been photographed, however, with they were seen. Remember the ones I showed you? You do have them on the web page. In China, were observed. They look like that. And also, they were located in Iraq during the war, Gulf War. And they were seen and photographed and filmed on YouTube. These strange things that these guys were. So what is that? They were saying, what is that? And you look at them and they're in taking pictures of them with their night vision equipment. And they look just like that. These are the observers. Not necessarily the Veranda deck. They could be seraphic order of celestial observers. Many of them probably were seraphic destiny guardians, ones that had a lot to do with protecting certain individuals or groups of individuals from troubles, depending on what their tasks were.
So this beam of light is just
a column of light.
A column of light is talking to you?
Yes. I don't want to use the term beam because it looks like a headlight beam or something beam. It's really a column of light that has a top and a bottom.
And it's just standing there talking with you.
Yes. They have been seen as columns of light in Christian revival services. And extremely spiritual, with tremendous waves of spiritual energy into the service. And certain individuals who were given enough insight were able to view them as both columns of light, and they called them angels. They looked like people with light, made out of light. So they're around. These are the seraphic order, angelic order. Yeah.
And you said I have it on the website. Is that the one with the, looks like these streaks of light coming from the sky?
Yeah, they were, they're not, you have to remember, they're not restricted to a certain size. They can be any size. The ones that are photographed there in China are, interestingly enough, telling me and anyone who would believe what I'm saying as far as these seraphic orders coming and in visiting a certain country, telling me that they're into China right now, heavily into China. China is going through an uplift in their society, and that uplift is really breaking down what the U.S. is trying to build up. The United States is trying to build up and take away rights of people. And in China, they're being guided to give a little bit more latitude and freedom in order that they may express creativity and be actually allowed to ascend up higher in terms of bringing the civilization of our planet higher. These orders are there to not to tell them what to do, but to have guidance given to people who are open to it. And during that, they make changes and they realize that a highly repressive government that they were was becoming ineffectual. So the United States is going the exact opposite direction, becoming highly repressive if they could, you know, through some of the laws such as the things that were passed because of 9/11. Patriot Acts and things like that. Patriot, yeah. And then, you know, they did away with, you know, things like posse comandatus. Can't use the military against its own people, but they are allowing that. It's wide open now. And reinterpreting the concept of holding a person. And they can hold any person and take away their rights immediately just by saying, labeling them a possible terrorist. So the person immediately stripped of all
their rights.
All their rights, yeah. So it's essentially the same. We're almost... It reminds me so much of how Pol Pot took over Cambodia.
Oh, yeah.
Pol Pot was able to convince... Now, these are the intellectuals he was convincing. These are the scientists, the teachers, professors, all those who are educated. And he had convinced them that a terrible thing was about to take place. So just follow the soldiers down. They're going to take you to a safe camp. And only these people were gathered up. And they simply walked out of Phnom Penh on foot, believing that they were only going to be there temporarily for maybe a day or so for their own safety now, for their own safety. This is exactly what they were being led down the road with, the concept that these soldiers they were coming over there and they were going to keep them safe from the terrible bombs that were going to come from the United States. And bomb Phnom Penh and things like that. Well, they walked out, and the rest is history. They never saw the killing fields. I've been there. I've seen their skulls. I've walked on dirt where the children's bones, I said, the little white specks you're standing on, I looked down on the ground. I said, yes, the little white specks you're standing on, they're not stones. They're the bones of children. Skulls. And the tree that is in front of you is the tree that children up to the age of 2 or 3 were grabbed by their ankles and literally whipped and beat onto their fell apart. Just their heads were just mangled.
Oh.
And this is how they killed them. And they killed these were the children of college professors, scientists, engineers, mathematicians, highly educated people who were going to uplift Cambodia. But they destroyed them and their children in such a brutal manner. And these people actually walked out under very, 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 oh, we're going to go, Antonia, you know, just for our safety. Well, sorry, that's not what happened. Hmm. And there are other things that went about. There were those who were on the wrong side of the army, and the soldiers or officers were, every single one of them, they found their bones and stuff under a particular river or lake. And uniforms, and no heads. They all had the honor of being beheaded because they were military. Others were shot, destroyed. Their numbers were reduced drastically in the millions by their very own people. Such a, you know, thing could happen. Well, the smartest people in Cambodia, that's what happened to them.
It's horrible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So never, never, never trust. There's only one place the trust can come from. And you can trust if you are under the order of the divine guidance, of your divine thought adjuster who will give you warning and guidance. But it will also remind you that we are all destined to perish anyway. Our bodies are not meant to continue on for a long time. That's part of our design. However, our scientists have come to a point where they are planning on being able to extend life on a very, very long scale. That long scale being in the nearly eternal if they wanted to. Recently, you know, this whole idea of stem cells and adult stem cells being able to do reconstructive work in the body as the body breaks down. But generally speaking, if you take the stem cells generally from, let's say, perhaps bone marrow, from my age, I'm 60 years old, let's say I take my bone marrow stem cells, and from there, they're able to properly treat it, to refine it, to become true stem cells, then reapply it into my body to repair, let's say, some other part of the body, or just aged parts of the body, just flow through your body, wherever it may be. They'll find the job that needs to be done. Those stem cells will essentially be 60-year-old stem cells. So the age of the rebuilt, let's say you were to use stem cells to rebuild, like you've heard about the people redoing or rebuilding certain important parts of the body, like a heart valve. Well, if they did a heart valve and were able to instruct the stem cells to take that form, the stem cells would create a 60-year-old heart valve. If it was for me, you know, let's say, or a 60-year-old ear, whatever, I need a new ear or something. Well, the newer discoveries were able to take adult stem cells and remove some of the indicators of age. You know, when a cell divides, there is a it looks like a rod at the end of it. It's molecular, and it gets a little shorter. It's like the candle that burns out. Well, the cell will only be able to divide so many times, and then essentially it's timed out. It can no longer live, and this is what we call aging. Essentially, aging out when all of our body ages out, no longer can be rebuilt. Well, they've created a stem cell. If they took a stem cell from me, same stem cells that would normally be my age, 60-year-old stem cells, well, they're able to create stem cells right now that are newborn. They will start all over again. And if they built, I needed a new heart, let's say, or the heart was aged, and all the repair work that needs to be done, go in there and rebuild, they would be able to create a heart that is not 60 years old, essentially, but one that is brand new, newborn cells. And from this, they said, if they take this over the next decade or so, this technology, they'll be moving people into an area where eternal life, if you keep repeating the process over and over, could very well be possible. Now, this is interesting, but it brings to mind that there will be those in our days, consider the last days, this is a biblical quote, that will seek death, but death will flee from them. Now, this is a strange thing, because how would death run away? A person could not die a natural death, continue to keep them alive. Because, see, our process is our real goal from one of the highest of all celestial beings is to ascend to become eternal, a being of eternal, an eternal being. And composed not of flesh and blood, but of one of the most fundamental and quite glorious parts of the universe, is light. And being able to interact with the entire universe of reality through all its dimensional properties in its full range, all dimensions, through what has been placed within many of the temple structures on Earth, 11 levels, first floor, first four, starting from street level where everybody walks around. It's interesting when I went to Siem Reap and to look at the temple there, which was built, and they do build towers, and it did show the fact that the most embossed and the most sculpted level was the first ground level, second level was better, third level was included more, but more spiritual designs, and fourth level was even more spiritual designs and less having to do with planetary life. And on the fifth levels, it seemed to be quite over missing any of these types of designs, and moving on up the staircase right on to the top was void of these things. It just showed you that it was a top room and you able to take this long walk all the way up the top. And anyway, that's typical of the message that was left on our planet in terms of our ascension process. And it was snuffed out through tradition, and partly because, and probably mostly because of the rebellion that broke out, that stopped the whole process. Although some of the celestials left indicators in our religion, which means to reconnect with the divine, our divine heritage, and a divine, really our divine mission to become divine. Anyway, I think you had some questions, I believe.
Yes, there's a question from Tony about higher mind, and he's asking the Celestials. He says, "Dear Curtis and Michael, what a fantastic show with the knowledge of the Celestials in addition to yours. One inspirational show interested me in particular about the higher mind. Could we ask the Celestials a couple of additional questions?" He has two questions here. One, is the higher mind the same as or similar to concepts like enlightenment, Christ consciousness, God consciousness, self-realization, spirit fusion, or adjuster fusion? And the second one is, how do us ordinary mortals go about accessing the higher mind? It's something I would love to do. This is something that Kathleen asked a while ago, but anyway, Tony says, many thanks.
I'll bring this forward to the Celestials. Heros narabur kurishai elhanan rukurhios eros yonasara riabri ariabos. I'm here to answer that question.
Oh, thank you. Is this Sharon?
Yes, I am of the order of the Sharon.
Hello, Sharon.
That question is indicating of some misconceptions and some correct statements. First of all, the principle of where you are presently as a human being, above that of the animal, is your ability to access the higher mind. The lower animals, even with large brains, are incapable of accessing the higher mind. The higher mind finds its position within each individual and can be and is by the interoperation between your mind and the mind of divinity through the thought adjuster. The engagement between that across the plane of the soul, your very being, one that is able to be transported outside of your body and will never perish unless put through the non-being process as to have been as never been. It is our hope that no one, not one of you who are able to access the higher mind, the divinity fractal is what we like to call it. A better, more simple, applicable term was given in the Rancho book as the thought adjuster. Through that engagement realm, you engage in the activator of the higher mind, which in itself has seven phases of true nature. Some of it being much like your own nature, able to speak, able to see, able to reason, and then progresses beyond that into a realm which is intuitive. Without thinking, you know. Without looking with your eyes, you see. Without hearing with your ears, you hear. This engagement is part of the higher mind, which interconnects itself with a spiritual circuit. These spiritual circuits find themselves engaged in seven combinations of divinity. You are able to gather to yourself the nature of humanity in the base level of the Creator Son. And through that, engage in the communicative ability of the Creator Son, extending yourself further, you will find yourself in relation to the first source and center across the plane of a natural engagement of the Creator Son's relation to you. The Father, He Himself being beyond full embrace of our mortal gifts. Therefore, we must engage even more of the personalities or the actuators within the spiritual circuit, composed of the first source, Father, second source, Son, third source, Spirit, and the combinations between them and all of them together, bringing forth seven natures of divinity attainment to become truly engaged in the higher realm and higher mind. Don't worry if you only are engaging presently in the sun circuit, which is very close to the human nature. You understand that the Creator Son became human here, Urantia, in this system, this solar system. Your planet, Urantia, was his final expression and also attainment of real life experience. Therefore, you have this advantage. Using that, you will gain entry into the higher realm of the higher mind through the spiritual attainment of the seven combinations of deity in a spiritual circuit. As I said before, to know without thinking, to see without your eyes, to hear without your ears. These are the ways in which you engage on the higher level to progress through time without going through time. This is how things that are ahead will be seen by those who can only know things which are in the past and in the present. But through the higher mind, you will begin to know through your relational exchange things of the higher mind. The higher mind is more than thought. It is perception. It is indeed knowing without knowing. In other words, to know without having experienced it. It is similar, you might say, to book learning. Do you understand book learning is something that is not directly learned through experimentation, observation, and experience? This knowledge is given through an artificial method in your base learning. In the higher mind, an engagement in knowledge that is not learned, but just known, is part of the higher mind. It is called wisdom by many. And it is what is calling to each sentient willed being that desires to know and truly be enlightened and engage in knowledge that is not theirs. Wisdom, which simply defined is knowledge gained through experience. But in the higher mind realm, it is sharing the experience of all. And that is the engagement in which the higher mind experience reference in the Supreme Being, the library of all experience and knowledge, is shared. You see, sometimes you think of a great repository of knowledge as a library. Now you think of a great repository of knowledge as being a tremendous computer. But in truth, in the realm in which we dwell, the Supreme Being is able to have a full repository of all manner of life and experience and will freely share such with those who are able to engage in such knowledge. But you must simply start your path. And that's why you live. But not to live and gain that which is only good in this world, but to gain that which is a progress and good for the worlds beyond, for the dimensions beyond, for the times that are timeless beyond. These things are yours, all to gain. Enlightenment is just to realize that it is offered. And now as willed creatures, you make that statement that you are not going to be just your own, but you will be a fully engaged, selfless, willed creature whose destiny is yours But interestingly enough, in order to participate in this higher mind, you cannot own yourself on a solitary level. You must become willing to become a part of the Supreme. And this is where you turn away from those things that are sinful in time and your space and your needs, and face the Supreme, which begs you for your right of life, that you will become more than having a little bit of life, but truly having all of life. And it's full experience. Therefore, the higher mind is more than thinking, more than perceiving. Yet, you need to engage in those levels while reaching for. And as you reach for it, peace at a time will come into play. As you are added, the seven enlightening, activating, divinity attaining experiences that come through living life with the goal in mind continually to be engaged in the higher mind. Coming to a point in which you become so in tune that you will activate your will as the will of God, as the will of the First Source. But how could you ever know that unless you become one with the First Source and Center? And through continual submission to, engagement with, the harmony and beauty of divinity, the higher mind will be yours, and you will be part of the higher mind.
Well, thank you, Sharon. That's certainly beautiful, that the higher mind is just something that we can access progressively, from our wisdom.
Progressively, you will gain. For surely, if it were sudden, it would be too much.
I see. Well, while you are here, Sharon, a fellow named Alfonso was asking about guardian angels. And he said his concern was, can someone lose one or distance themselves from their protection?
You will never lose guardianship. Guardianship remains with you even beyond your natural physical life. You can instruct guardians to limit you, their protection over you, which may seem at times to be as if they deserted you. And many times you will not know that they are present, but because of one's own situational as well as emotional state, find your oneself incapable of addressing them for help. In this state, you will generally find yourself perplexed because it is a state which is considered evil or diseased. In other words, in such a state, you are unable to commission aid in the situation because of moving away from the harmony and resonance of the divinity within oneself, the thought adjuster. Therefore, to simplify it, if one perceives to do something that is questionable and against that which the thought adjuster recommends, one will find it difficult to attain help or protection in such a manner, and has by their choices of move in their life, in their choice, in their situation, rendered themselves incapable of attaining that help. That is why it is much more important to try to find those positions in your life, decisions that will not be able to be summarized as having evil contention or evil intentions, contending against the good or the right, which comes primarily from the first source. To profit may not be, and many times is not, evil. But in many ways, profit hides an evil in terms of the end result, in such a way protection is removed or finds itself very hard to find, unless a disengagement with the evil intent. Sin is an error that cuts one off completely from this absolute protection by free will choice. Evil only thinks or moves in ways that do not accomplish it, and it will allow many times intervention and guidance to come into one's life. And it is in those points that you must remember that the guardian of destiny that may have charge over you as an individual or a group, your family, friends, church groups, or whatever, will find room to move one away from evil into the point of happiness and joy, or often described as blessedness. To be blessed is to find that path away from evil choices and evil intentions that many times one is ignorant to, but eventually will find your way through if you find guidance from the divinity that is already in you. And then great joy will come forward. And then great guidance will come forward. And then even great protection will come forward. I say, for now, I will leave. I have said enough. Digest what I have said and live blessed. Live happy.
Thank you,
Sharon. Sharon Arhono Kasan Elaru Kehari. He's gone now. He's gone.
Thank you, Sharon. I liked how he said, divinity is already in you. That's beautiful. Because we always seem like we want to attain something we don't have, and here we're blessed with it already.
Yeah, that's a mistake that, in fact, it was something that the apostles, many of the first century Christians who, you know, were able to write down, Peter was one that said, you know, and Peter was the fisherman guy, you know, selected by Jesus as one of his followers or those that he would mentor. But he said that the mystery of godliness hidden from the ages is made manifest in us, which is now made manifest, so it's brought forward, which is Christ in us, the hope of glory. Peter understood that, and that was hidden. So that, what, he can control people. Even the most intelligent people. I gave the example of, you know, I learned this from the people who were there in Cambodia about how the most brilliant minds were just walked right into a trap. You know, and there were a few who said something is wrong. And many of the Buddhist monks knew that it was wrong, but they also knew that they were another target. So they gave up their lives trying to demonstrate the evil intent. But by that time, it was too late, you know. So do not think that such a thing could not happen in our country because of our present predicament in terms of how the behavior. It's not so much in terms of looking at the economy, looking at industry, looking at our position worldwide, and it's looking at the behavior of our own government and how and what they're doing. And what does government do? Well, in they call it and disguise in a type of absolute control under a concept of patriotism, you know. So in the Patriot Act, they basically found a mechanism by which they can control the masses and then destroy society. Well, protect, supposedly, society, but in terms of controlling it only by those few. And I remember back in the days when my father was alive and he was the head of the civil defense, they would oftentimes talk about, in their meetings, about the mass mind, you know. And he would come home once in a while and he would say things to me. He said, Michael, think for yourself. Don't listen to what is out there in the paper, and all these things around you that are put out by the controllers of information, broadcast, radio, TV. Think for yourself. Everything is shibai. Shibai is a Japanese word that really is talking about street acting, performance. So it was used in the political arena then, back in that time, about how the orchestrator of mass consciousness would use a lot of shibai, play acting. Don't believe it. Look at what is important, you know. So in terms of civil defense and giving warnings for tsunami, they're good points and right points. But they're also talking in those behind-the-room scenes about mass consciousness, about civil unrest, as well as, you know, protecting people from things like, you know, run up the mountains, get out, clear the ocean, clear the inundation zones from the tsunami, you know, or whatever. But also about how different levels of problems. And during World War II, my dad was here as a individual that was considered very essential, and was working in the for the Allied side as a, you know, kind of like a go-between culturally, as well as a radio kind of intelligence officer, being able to understand Japanese fluently. And he saw how, you know, it was necessary to control the population and the fear and the different devices used back then. But he summarized it all basically down to, for me, it was just said something that just basically said, think for yourself. Don't have everybody do your own thinking. And when it comes down to divinity, it really comes down to have think for yourself and have those thoughts adjusted by divinity. Have them, you know, bounced off of the divine counselor already built in us. Mm-hmm. And he'll expose the lie. And that's what many people are doing right now, who are following their lead and are, you know, trying to expose the lie. You know.
Yeah, it's terrible what they're doing to the people of Earth.
Yes.
It should be a beautiful place to live, this planet, in peace and harmony. And it seems like the evil forces just will not have it. They just want to always have disruption. But it's so wonderful to have you and Sharon on again. And thank you, Sharon, for telling us that we already have the higher mind built right into us.
Yeah,
that's great.
There's so many different levels of engagement, and we just need to just work with one. And next thing you know, we find another level. I remember when I first had my complete knowledge engagement, where the answer would come in a complete, unthought about, you just bloom right there in your mind, completely, every little detail, all figured out. And I said, how did I come up with that? Well, I didn't, mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
You did.
Well, yeah, through the engagement of the higher mind, you might say that mm-hmm. God allowed it to happen, you know, because I was moving toward that. And then it just keeps going. And as long as you keep engaging, there are a lot of things that distract us. entertainment like TV. Watched a lot of TV, get deeply involved in it. And, sometimes it's a big distraction. I find it hard to look at some of those distractions. I don't like to, because I have, I really actually have a very, very much like an active television set in me built in, except it's tuned to the first source and center. And, I can just sit there and people wonder, oh, I can just sit there. I remember my wife and I'm going on an 8-hour, whatever, trip from Tokyo to New York. That's a pretty long trip, how many hours was it? And I'd be there, not watching a movie, not reading a book, just there talking to and communing with the divinity already built in me. And boy, how do I do it? She said. And I told her, you know better than that. And he says, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, our mind is a magnificent thing, and that television or even music or whatever just constantly keeps us distracted. It's
But I
takes away our thinking.
We can actually have see without seeing with our eyes. We have a television set already built into us in a way. And it's interesting because the images sometimes will pop in. And not like visions where you can open your eyes and you still kind of see it. But they're more like impressions and sometimes even more than that. So you engage our minds with the higher mind and it becomes the real television set, one that we carry with us. And then, of course, that's how I engaged in the higher realm of knowledge and receiving much more information. The Rancha book is a good way of engaging our knowledge base in terms of relating them. The names in the Rancha book are like the language that any specialist tends to keep. Doctors have their own doctor lingo. Engineers have their own engineering lingo. Mm-hmm. And the everyday person has their, their general way of thinking. But those who are Urantia readers have their own lingo because it's these languages or these words or descriptors are placed in there and they're there. And the very interesting thing about my experience was how my experience with the Celestials, being there at the New Jerusalem, in there, actually being using the very same names that are used in the Rancho book. Like, can I see the engine? And they looked at each other. And, power source. Okay, let's go get him. And immediately they show me the Frandalank. And that's why I linked it with Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. And then I found that name in the Urantia book. And I said, oh, there it is. They're using the same words, Frandalank being one. Verandadeck was another one, because I remember even when I really didn't have my full remembrance of it, was that I was able to at least relate this in terms of realizing that they were people. I just would call that people,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, there's more and more of those words that were used. My graduate guide, she introduced me. I'm a graduate guide. And I said, oh, you graduated. You look like you're only, didn't even finish school yet. You got that picture of him, right? That video that's very, very, very close to his image. I feel sorry for that. So anyway.
All right. Well, that was beautiful bringing Sharon on. Thank you, Michael. That's always wonderful to hear him on here with you. And I know you're listening, Sharon. Thank you for coming on and being part of this. And explaining the higher mind to us. We carry our mind around everywhere we go, and we really don't quite know what we have, but it's our creativity. And it's one thing we can always figure out what to do because we are creative beings.
Right. And that's part of the higher mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's that level above the animal, goes beyond. It's the answers when there's no answer, interesting enough.
And the animals, they have a creative mind also. They're pretty clever.
Yeah, with limits, of course,
because
they won't engage in the... They can't engage, actually. If they could, then they would have become the sentient beings of this planet. But once sentience is attained, there will be this one order in the planet that brings the planet to its level of... Actually, you know, we're moving toward the level of light and life, a true civilization that will extend forever.
Well, someday we will become a column of light.
Yes.
Someday. Well, thank you, Michael. And aloha to you, and so good to have you back.
Okay, aloha.
Okay. Aloha. Bye.